Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Glory Glory Man United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kyle Quinn. And joining me on this Monday morning is Tom Simpson from Australia. I can't remember the name of your new podcast, Tom. Can you remind everyone, please? And welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on in not the greatest of circumstances yet again. But that is what Manchester United have dished up. But yes, I have started a couple of months ago my sort of own audio-only podcast. So not on YouTube, but audio-only on sort of iTunes, Spotify, etc. called Hated, Adored, Never Ignored. And yeah, just something a little bit different from the YouTube space in terms of it's not sort of your daily content, sort of one show a week, looking at some issues that sort of a little bit sort of away from your transfer targets. Yeah, it still touches on everything, but away from sacking managers in and out, just something talk about the youth team, the women's team, fans' experiences, etc. But yeah, just something a little bit different if anyone is keen on that. But check that out. Hated, Adored, Never Ignored on whatever podcast app you do have. But yeah, thanks for having me on. But yeah, not in great circumstances this Monday.
Yeah, that is a well-known United slogan, so that should be easy to remember. I was going to say the United podcaster. I'm
Yeah.
so used to saying that when I introduce you, but obviously you're not doing that anymore. So United lost again. Although this kind of highlights the situation that we're in. The fact that we're seeing this is almost a decent result that we lost just 1-0 to Arsenal at home, given that we expected to get absolutely battered. We actually had more shots than Arsenal and more possession than Arsenal, which surprised me. It's probably enough for Ten Hag to claim that we were the better team. I don't actually watch his interviews anymore, to be honest, but I won't be surprised if he said that. So what did you make of the performance then, Tom?
Yeah, look, it's actually quite interesting. I was thinking that, and look, I think when you're watching the match and your emotion towards it, it's sort of hard to sort of have that detailed sort of tactical analysis of it. But look, compared to where we want to be, of course, and given the whole situation, it's not good enough, of course. Given the fact that it was first against eighth or second against eighth, however you sort of looked at the table at the time, we did actually quite well considering recent performances. Now, again, that well is not good enough. It's not where we should be. But I think a lot of us went into this thinking, oh my God, we're going to lose 5 or 6 nil. I'm not sure if we're the better team, but you could definitely make a case that we're the better team. I think on another day, we could score a couple of goals. Now, Arsenal could probably have the same claim as well. But I thought overall, we could, especially considering our recent performances and issues we have had, to play like that against a good team, I wasn't expecting that. Now, again, not good enough, of course, I'm fully aware of that. But I don't think it was bad as made out, just in regards to this individual performance. Now, I think we can have sort of big looks at a player overall or a manager overall, etc. But I think for the specific 90 minutes, where my expectations were, I wasn't too overly fussed with the performance.
Yeah, United, I mean, they did reasonably well compared to what we've been used to in recent weeks, and but it's still a loss at the end of the day, like you say. The goal was pretty poor. Casemiro playing Kai Havertz on side. Then there was a number of errors by Evans and Wan-Bissaka. Wan-Bissaka was pretty poor overall. He's playing like someone who knows that he's leaving in the summer, that the club want to sell him. Although his concentration has always been an issue, his defending at the back post has always been an issue. Like I've spent a lot of time in this show criticizing Dalot, and that one of the people who absolutely adores him, the way a lot of United fans have seemed to be this season. But Wan-Bissaka, yeah, he's. I think he's coming toward the end of his United career, isn't he?
I think it's like players when we don't often sort of label it towards fullbacks or defenders, but when we're looking at an attacking player, a winger or a striker, we always talk about confidence. He's playing without confidence or he's playing with confidence. We don't often sort of talk about that in and around fullbacks. I think Wan-Bissaka's lacking a little bit of confidence, and that's not to say he should have a future at United or he shouldn't have a future at United. I just think in regards to the way he is performing, he's just off his game. And you cast your mind back to when Eric Ten Hag came in 2 years ago. Aaron Wan-Bissaka was arguably first name out the door. He was pretty much frozen out. He wasn't even making match day squads when he was completely fit. He was completely frozen out. He came back in around the World Cup time, and you could say was arguably one of our players of the season in what we many of us consider not players of the season, but especially that second half. And we all had those debates. Eric Ten Hag improved Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Now here we sit a year later, we're saying he hasn't improved. That's the fickle nature and how quick our opinion does change. But I'm Wan-Bissaka at the moment. And look, I don't think, again, Eric Ten Hag's hands are tied in regards to the amount of injuries. It's not helping him, the constant changing from right back to left back and inverting in full back. Like, I do feel a little bit for Wan-Bissaka. But ultimately, if you are going to sort of look at his future at Manchester United, this last 6 weeks, Aaron Wan-Bissaka hasn't helped his case if he's wanting to stay at Manchester United. So he's struggling at the moment, but God, look around the pitch, who isn't struggling?
Yeah, I think there's quite a few people who are going to leave over the course of the next few windows, and I think he'll be one of them. I think he's into the last year of his contract as well. So I think the new football department would probably look to move him on. I think it's probably the last opportunity for United to get some money for him, although I don't anticipate that it's going to be that anywhere near what we paid for him. It's going to be a very small fee, I think. Now, it was a couple of individual performances yesterday that we can be positive about, and that one of them is obviously Amad Diallo, who's waited so long for a start. I think it's 887 days since he last started a game for Manchester United, which is quite unbelievable, really. He showed why so many fans have been calling for him to start games yesterday, and certainly he didn't disappoint, really. Obviously, he didn't score. That's what you want to see, ultimately. But he played well enough, I feel, to start the next game against Newcastle. How do you feel about it, Tom?
If he's fit, fingers crossed he is fit. It does seem by social media, it does seem just it's a basic knock. So it does look like he will be okay, whether for this first game or the FA Cup final, time will tell. But in regards to the performance, yeah, he did well. I thought especially, look, Manchester, I think football fans in general, but especially Manchester United fans have a bit of a tendency in regards to, I'm not sure overrating's the word, but getting a little bit too excited about the people who don't play. Whoever's not playing, we always rate a little bit high. If Donny van der Beek wasn't playing under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, put him in our midfield, he'll fix things. And we don't like Antony at the moment, so play Amad, he's going to fix things. I think Amad ultimately did well, especially considering Antony's performances when you do compare the two. This is not a criticism of Amad because I like him. I think he has a future in the game, whether that be at Old Trafford or not, I'm not sure, but I do think he has something about him. When I'm watching that performance or watching him in general, do I think he is... Look at right wingers for every other top club. Manchester City's right wing, I know they interchange, but whoever's going to be playing there is probably scoring 20 goals a season. Saka scoring 20 goals a season. Mohamed Salah scoring 30, 40 goals a season. Do I see Amad doing that from right wing for Manchester United? Not to criticise him, I don't see where he does that. Now, he might prove me wrong and turn that around. So I like what I see from Amad. I'm not going to be jump into any conclusions, say he's the answer for Manchester United over Antony, and not to say Antony's the answer to that. I just think we need to hold our horses a little bit when sort of getting too excited about Amad, because here we are. You mentioned that those stats, his first start in 800 something days, he might not be available for the rest of the season if this injury keeps him out. And I think that's through no fault of his own, but he is unfortunately a little bit injury prone, and I don't like to label that at players because a lot of injuries, unfortunately, is just a case of bad luck. As I said, this one was a knee-on-knee little bit of contact. So you're right, very good performance, happy with it. Yeah, just the moving parts around him didn't help him sort of with those final touches and getting a goal over the line.
Yeah, he might be one of those players that will struggle to be a regular in United's team, long term.
But we had the exact same debate with Pellistri. We're saying Pellistri needs to play. Pellistri needs to play. When he played, he did well. Did he do well? And he played and get enough of a chance. And Amad's probably not getting enough of a chance. That's the cutthroat nature, and that is the real world at Manchester United. But we have this so often, and it's the cutthroat nature. But unfortunately, when a player does come in and get their chance, albeit one day in 800 days, you have to take it. That's not fair. But that's like, if you have to take it. And is Ahmed taking his chance? Cash your mind back. If it was against Liverpool in the FA Cup, we'd say yes. Against Arsenal today, we'd say no. So it's just an unfortunate situation through no fault of his own. But yeah, I'm not sure where I stand on Ahmed's future at the moment.
Yeah, if you look at that right wing position, he's not starting as it is, and it seems as if United's number one attacking target in the summer is Michael Olise, and they've already got the wheels in motion on that particular transfer. So if United do sign Michael Olise again, that puts Ahmad further down the pecking order. Although he can play as a number 10, but I don't see him getting that role either, with Bruno Fernandes being at the club. Very, very disappointing, isn't it, that Bruno had scored, recently he had 7 goals and 2 assists in just 10 games or something. He was playing exceptionally well there for a period of time, and then he got injured, and he has been injured in his whole career, and now he's missed 2 games through injury. That's just symbolic of our bad luck at the moment, isn't it?
I think that you mentioned the word luck, and a lot of the narrative around when we discuss injuries at the moment is who's to blame. Is it the player's fault? Is it Erik ten Hag's fault? Is it the medical department? I think with Bruno, well, we can very much sort of put it down a bit of bad luck. Not bad luck, just life. Football players get injured. He's playing with a broken hand as well, and I think the injury is something else. So, it's unfortunate, especially this time of the season. But if you want to take a glass half full approach, could just recharge his batteries a little bit before the FA Cup. If you give him 2 weeks off, not that he's going to make the difference in the FA Cup, but if you can look for any type of 1%er, if you can give him a little bit of a rest, because at the moment, we do look tired. Now, you can say we're at fault for looking tired in regards to Erik ten Hag's rotation or just our lack of professionalism potentially on the training pitch, whatever, but we do look tired at the moment. I was watching Alejandro Garnacho, and Garnacho was on the verge of having quite a good game. But then in that final third, sort of when he got to the pivotal moment, he just looked tired. But again, you look at the stats, he started the last 30-something games for Manchester United. A kid, that shouldn't be happening, but his performance somewhat warranted, and I just think, at the moment, we're looking tired. And when a team is flying at the top of the table like Manchester City or Arsenal, players don't get tired. That's just, we had that when we were growing up watching Manchester United. When we were in form, players didn't get tired. You're running off adrenaline. When things are bad and there's bad mood around the club and you're losing games, you feel those knocks. You feel a little bit more heavy. And that's what we're feeling at the moment. And that's not the recipe to play well. You need to be feeling good. And I don't think our players or fans or club in general is feeling in a good mood at the moment.
No, definitely not. It does become difficult to say the same things week in, week out. It's the same criticisms on every United podcast after every game now, and it becomes a bit repetitive even doing it, never mind listening to it. I think, but something different, I suppose, happened yesterday. And now Sofyan Amrabat actually had a good game. He's come in for a lot of criticism this season. People have, not been fans of the 10 million loan fee that was paid for him, and thought that was a really bad transfer. And ultimately, I think he will be sent back to Fiorentina in the summer. But yesterday, we actually seen the player that we paid for. He's very good at breaking up play. Not really great on the ball, but it was good to finally see a decent performance from Amrabat yesterday, Tom.
Yeah, that's off to him. You can only give credit to him for that performance. It's sort of what we expected. I think a lot of us sort of watch him at the World Cup or a lot of YouTube, and you expect the energy in that defensive area of the pitch. But where have we seen most of his football this season? It's sort of cameo appearances at left back. He's never really had that sort of opportunity in a big game to start in that area of the pitch. Now, again, the moving parts around him on paper, Kobbie Mainoo and Scott McTominay, pros and cons, etc. That's in your biggest or not biggest game of the season, but when you're playing top of the table, Scott McTominay and a kid in Kobbie Mainoo is probably not what you want as a midfield partner, and behind him, Johnny Evans and Casemiro. So if Sofyan Amrabat is to look forward and behind, it's not the ideal situation when you're playing the best team in the league or one of the best teams in the league. So from an individual point of view, I thought he did really well. Now, that's not to have a discussion around his future at Manchester United. I think a lot of the fan base would be in agreement where that should stand. But, yeah, he did well. And you look at that and you look at the comparisons to Casemiro, whether be it centre-back or central midfield, going into this cup final, could you make a case that Amrabat should be starting in central midfield?
Yeah, I think you would have to consider it now, especially as we're going to have to really probably set up defensively in the cup final and play on the counter-attack.
If Casemiro was, let's say we have two centre-backs available, let's say Johnny Evans, Maguire, Lissandro Martinez, Varane, let's say we have two starting centre-backs fit and available, central midfield, Amrabat or Casemiro, it's a tricky one at the moment. You might lean towards Amrabat, which I don't think could happen, but maybe it should.
Yeah, Casemiro has gone really off the boil. Looks like his legs have gone. The performance against Crystal Palace was particularly bad. Maybe he's playing himself out of the team. And maybe Amrabat can play his way into the team. But Amrabat would probably need to play well against Newcastle and Brighton. You know, as well. He can't then, after playing well against Arsenal, he can't then go and drop a stinker against Newcastle, because then he'd have no chance of starting the cup final. But it'll be interesting to see if we have, you know, two centre backs available for the FA Cup final. Does he go with Casemiro or Amrabat in midfield? Or maybe he might go with both in the FA Cup final. Who knows?
Yeah.
United might need that kind of protection. One piece of positive injury news is that Lissandro Martinez seems to be on his way back, is chopping up the bit, wants to get minutes before the FA Cup final. I was glad yesterday that he didn't play, because I thought that would have been the wrong decision given what happened against Brentford, just back from injury and then injured again. So we don't want to rush him back. And obviously he's going to need to play 45 minutes somewhere before the Cup final. But I'm glad we didn't rush him back, because we're really, really going to need him in the cup final if we have any chance of winning. So it's going to be important to have Martinez for that cup final, Tom. But Luke Shaw, I think, has had a setback, so I don't think that's going to happen, and that's a big blow, isn't it?
Luke Shaw probably is the one, and when Luke Shaw comes back, we don't know. Is he going to be in form? Is he not going to be in form? So you wouldn't know if it's a good sort of return for the FA Cup final. But on paper, Lissandro Martinez and Luke Shaw, both attackingly but also defensively, obviously make you stronger. Not that it's going to make you strong enough to beat Manchester City. They're ultimately the better team, so even if we're at full strength, it's going to be a tough day at the office. But Lissandro Martinez, I agree, is the one in regards to you don't want to rush him back. You kind of do have to rush him back, because there's only a couple of days left in the season. It needs, as I say, maybe 245 minutes, 90 minutes in total in the next week. We didn't want to give him the 90 minutes yesterday. Well, it's the same week. We're going to have to give him those minutes eventually at some stage. So there does need to be some type of risk taken. And that is football. He's going to come through that with flying colours and be ready for the final, or he's going to break down in that 45 minutes, which we all demand he gets, and we're going to say we rushed him back too quick. So that's the life we're going to have to, unfortunately, sort of live as a Manchester United fan in this coming week. And Lissandro Martinez is not the only one. Varane is there. Varane doesn't seem like he's going to be back available. Harry Maguire as well. Harry Maguire, I think, is out for the season. So it's hard, because it's unfair on Lissandro Martinez to pin our hopes. All our discussions at the moment, getting back for the final. We've conceded 6 goals with Lissandro Martinez against Manchester City. Like, he's not the answer to sort of stop Haaland or stop Manchester City the way they play. He'll obviously help, and he'll be a great boost for us. But we're not suddenly going to win the final. I hope to God he is the difference. But it's not a case, okay, he's back, we're now favourites. That's far from the situation. So fingers crossed he's back, but it is a very fine balancing act in regards to where and how many minutes you do give him ahead of the final, because there's only 2 games in a relatively short space of time ahead.
Yeah, I think you're right. Even if we had both Martinez and Shaw available for the final, I don't think that would change anything. Man City are at their ruthless best at the moment. Oh, probably
they're flying at the moment. You can't do it. It's just an unfortunate situation that they're where they are as a club, and we are where we're as a club.
Yeah, I thought about this over the course of the last few weeks, and I'm hoping this is not going to happen, that this turns into Man City Watford FA Cup final where it's 6-0. And I don't think that's going to happen. I might be wrong. I think United will make a fist of it, but I think ultimately they'll lose. And, you know, it'll be something like the league game at the Etihad this season. Yeah. United took the lead and then eventually City broke them down and scored three goals.
I think our natural pessimism as people and as Manchester United fans go into that against Arsenal. 12 hours ago, we were thinking, God, they're going to beat us 5-0. Never going to be the case. Always going to be a tight game this stage of the season. Now, yes, there is a possibility where City could win 6 or 7-0. Well, I think we can all envisage how that happens. It doesn't often now. It's probably happened a little bit too frequently under Erik ten Hag the last 2 years in regards to a few heavy defeats. Of course, it is possible. But if you're a betting man, it's very unlikely. Now, as a game could sort of stretch in the last 2 or 3 minutes towards injury time and become a 3-1, become a 4-1 if you're chasing the game towards the end of the game. But I think, yeah, it's one of those ones where it will be tight. And then, obviously, that first goal, whatever way it goes, is obviously going to drastically change the game, whether in our favour or their favour. And, yeah, look, I think City will obviously – it'll be a Man City against Man United game. There is going to be one team dominating the play. We know what way that game's going to go. In regards to the scoreline, I do think it'll be relatively close than what our sort of heads are telling us at the moment.
Yeah, and I've just been thinking recently that – and some people have brought this up on social media as well. Not that I think this player is world-class and – he would be the difference maker between United winning the league and not winning the league. Far from it. But someone I think we've missed this season, particularly in big games, is Fred. I think him doing the dirty work in big games was massive in Ten Hag's first season. And United have really lacked that this season. And I just remember even the game we beat City in at Old Trafford January 23. He was magnificent in that game. And we'd really kind of missed him this season, haven't we?
Yeah, well, we have this debate about so many players, and Fred is the prime example in regards to when you have him, you see all the limitations, you see all the deficiencies. You accept the pros and sort of welcome them, but there are one or two glaring issues which you say, no, okay, let's move on, let's get better. But that's the sort of the world of football. It's the grass isn't always greener. You can't always go get a better player. Sometimes a transfer fee would say, yep, that player's better or his resume is better. There's no guarantee that sort of translate to life at Old Trafford. And I do think, again, in hindsight, it looks like the wrong decision. I do think at the time it was the right decision to move Fred on, both for him and Manchester United. But you look now, could we benefit from having Fred? Of course. But I think if you look at how signings could have worked out, if Amrabat hit the ground running and there was a need for him in midfield and he came in and sort of played the first 10 games he was available, maybe he could have turned into that. You look at the Mason Mount situation with Ericsson. I think a lot of us at the moment, and probably rightly so, looked at the Mason Mount sign and said, why do we need Mason Mount? I think if you cast your mind back to the type of football we played with our best midfield last season, was Casemiro, Bruno Fernandes and Christian Eriksen. I think if you're just on paper looking, okay, how can you improve that? Go get a younger Christian Eriksen. Mason Mount was that Christian Eriksen. It just hasn't worked out for a multitude of reasons, the main one being injuries. So, that's not to blame Amrabat, that's not to blame Fred or Mason Mount or Erik ten Hag. It's just the cookie hasn't crumbled in Manchester United's favour for this season through a heap of reasons. And long story short, you mentioned Fred. Yeah, if you're bringing back for a one-game loan against Manchester City, you'd be doing it, and you'd be called an idiot if you're thinking that a year ago.
Yeah, because the fact is that Amrabat has been a downgrade on Fred, unfortunately. And just came to my mind there as I'm talking that Fred was magnificent against Barcelona as well and scored in the home game against Barcelona. Mm-hmm. Could not imagine Amrabat doing that, if I'm being brutally honest. So I'm going to do a quick rundown of the player ratings, and I'll leave it up to you, Tom, to give each player a mark out of 10. Andrew Onana, I think he kept the score down yesterday. To be fair to him, what would you give him, Tom?
Yeah, I thought he had a decent game. I think he's, again, the jury is out, in my opinion, in regards to Onana, but I think he's improving and been relatively steady for Manchester United, especially considering his start in this game against Arsenal. I thought, yeah, he was good. I think he's getting a little bit, not more comfortable on the ball. He's obviously comfortable on the ball, but he's maybe having a little bit more of an impact in regards to playing out from the back. I would trust him a little bit more. I saw Garnacho pretty much have a shot at him in the first half, really pinged it back to him. I was thinking, oh my God, this is going to go in the goal. And he dealt with it quite well. So, Onana, I thought, did well. You'd say, look, we're on the losing team, he conceded a goal. But you'd say a solid 7, a 6 on a rough day.
Hey, Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah, I thought he struggled. Again, up against tough opposition, he's out of position in terms of tactically as well. Asked to do a job that he's obviously not familiar or not too comfortable doing. He struggled, I thought. And he's just playing a little bit without confidence. There was that time, I think it was Martinelli in the second half, was running into the box and Wan-Bissaka was sort of jockeying and dropping off. There comes a time as a defender, you've got to go make a tackle. You look when Garnacho was dribbling at Saliba. He made a decision, okay, I'm dropping back. Okay, the time's now to tackle. Wan-Bissaka never really made that decision to go out to Martinelli, that shot with Joe Onana saved. So Wan-Bissaka, I thought, struggled. I don't want to be too harsh with a 4, but in terms of a 4 or 5, in my opinion.
Casemiro?
I think the narrative around Casemiro is maybe going to sort of affect this in regards to it's not working at the moment, especially out of position and ultimately at fault for the goal. So if you're ultimately at fault for a game-winning moment or a game-losing moment, that is going to mark you down. I thought in regards to his performance as a centre-back, I thought he was, considering he's out of position, I thought he was okay. But is okay good enough to succeed at Manchester United or beat the team who's top in the league? Probably not. So especially given his impact on the game, obviously no, not on a 5 probably.
Johnny Evans.
God, another one. You have to apply this context in regards to what he's brought in for. My hat goes off to Johnny Evans every day that he's out there and fighting for Manchester United through injury and filling in. He shouldn't be playing for Manchester United at this stage of the season in big games. Here we are, Erik ten Hag has to take him off so he's fit for the FA Cup final. That's just... it's crazy. There's a part of me that enjoys that in regards to I love Johnny Evans, but him and Manchester United shouldn't be in this position. But in regards to his performance, I always think he performs well enough. If I'm giving Casemiro a 5, I'll give Johnny Evans a 6.
And Dalot?
I thought he looked good. Defensively, it's obviously going to be always a tough time against Arsenal. But I thought you don't look to your fullback to win a game. But I thought if something was going to happen, maybe it was going to come through Dalot at some stage in regards to whether a run or an assist or a pass. So I liked what I saw from Dalot. Again, was it good enough? Probably not. But that's down to a lot of the moving parts as well. So I don't know what you think of these ratings. I was looking at probably a 6 for Diogo Dalot. I think I've only watched the game once and my head was all over the shop when I was watching it, just given the emotion and everything. So a lot of people might disagree with these ratings, but I'd be looking at 6 off the top of my head.
No, that's fine. Maybe I wouldn't give Dalot a 6, but the rest of them, yeah, I would agree with. But I'm a pretty harsh critic of Dalot. I don't sign up to all the hype around him from fans online. I think he's just a mediocre player and nothing more than that. And United really need better quality than him. But because there's been a slight improvement this season, I think people have got massively carried away with Diogo Dalot, but not me. Kobbie Mainoo.
I thought he looked good. And again, I'm not sure what sort of, I'd have to go watch the match back to sort of what impact he had on the game, but I thought what he did individually, he was very good in terms of his close control, really good feet at times. And I'm never disappointed with Kobbie Mainoo. I think there was one game, was it last week? There's one game a week or two weeks ago where I thought he struggled, and it was the first time I really seen him sort of look off the pace and a little bit sort of not out of his depth, but I thought he really struggled. But this one I thought, again against arguably not the best midfield in my opinion, but the table doesn't lie. They're the top team. I thought given the situation, Kobbie Mainoo performed quite well. Again, we lost the game, so you can't be handing out 8s and 9s, but be looking at a solid 6.
And this will be an interesting one. Sofyan Amrabat.
Yeah, again, maybe 6.5, 7. A little bit just sort of more impactful than Kobbie Mainoo. I mean, now Kobbie Mainoo in regards to ability maybe showed a little bit, or definitely showed a lot more than Sofyan Amrabat. But if Sofyan Amrabat wasn't in midfield and doing what he did, what would the score have been? So that's why I think Sofyan Amrabat had a, again, well, we lost the game, so we can't be talking about the impact he had on the game, but or sort of celebrating keeping the score down, far from that. But, yeah, I thought Amrabat, again, I don't want to say his best appearance in a Man United shirt. Someone maybe could make the case that it is, though. So I don't want to hand out a 7 in a loss, but I guess I did that with Onana. So I'll be looking maybe 6.5, 7 out of 10 for Amrabat.
And Scott McTominay playing as the number 10?
He's in the 10, which I don't mind at times, given the situation. But again, look, I'm a big defender of Scott McTominay and saying how sort of important his role is within the squad. And I always come back into these big games, starting at home to Arsenal, Scott McTominay shouldn't be your number 10. Going away to the Etihad, Scott McTominay shouldn't be the number 6 who you want to dictate play and start pulling the strings. Well, we should have better players in that position in those big moments. Scott McTominay at home to Sheffield or away to Everton in midfield. Okay, that's what your squad player is for, not to be the main man against Arsenal in a huge clash. So I thought he struggled in regards to that aspect of the game. Defensively, he gets through what he gets through, especially physically. Arsenal as well have a few big boys as well. So, look, it's no real impact on the game. I'd say a 5 for McTominay.
Amad Diallo.
Yeah, a tough one for him, obviously coming off injured. I think if he gets an assist or gets a goal, you're definitely looking at 7 or 8 out of 10. Those didn't come, and he comes off injured. So off the first half performance, let's say we go in 0-0, you do look at that a lot more positively, and you'd be saying it's a 7 out of 10, especially sort of comparing to previous performers from other players in that right-wing position. I liked what I saw. You'd have to say a generous 7 out of 10 probably, and maybe 6.5.
And Hoyland?
I'm starting to feel for Hoyland. I like him. I like what he brings. I think he has a future in the game, whether that be at Old Trafford, I'm not sure. And I do like him. He gives his all. And I do think there is a path where he turns in to a good Manchester United player. I think he's struggling at the moment. Now, yes, we can sit here and say the service isn't there. He's not getting the service 100%. But when you're not getting the service as a striker, do something else. And he does get himself about. He tries, etc. I think he needs to add a little bit more to his game. And I think he's struggling at the moment. And goals change that. If he gets a little bit more confidence, we saw that run he went on a few months ago, that can change things. But I think he looks like a kid up front. And that's what he is. So I can't be too critical of him. He should be the backup striker this year. He's not. He's the main man. So I thought he struggled, in my opinion, but 5. But he's up against, I think, Arsenal have the best defence in the league, and they're 2 central defenders. Killen, I think there was a stat that Manchester United have had 30 or 40 centre-back partnerships this season. Arsenal have had 3. But it's just they're really strong at centre-back. So tough one for Hoyland. I'll give him 5.
Yeah, I do feel sorry for him, to be honest. Garnacho?
Thought he was close to having a really good game. If he gets an assist and 2 goals in terms of curling 1 or 2 in the top corner, he's seeing an 8 out of 10. That didn't happen, though. He lacked that final execution. So ultimately, he was close to making things happen. I'd say a 6 out of 10, but that's generous. I can understand with the frustration around the lack of quality and lack of end product, people would mark him down all 5. I see that. But if something was going to happen, and this is the fine balance, is he very brave and is he always going ahead, not letting his head drop? Well, when he makes a mistake, that's a very positive trait. But also, some people would say it's a little bit deluded. Well, if it's not happening for you, pass it off to someone else, let them make it happen. And that's a fine balance, which you'll obviously gain through experience. So tough one for Garnacho. If I'm being generous, a 6, my frustration towards his performance, so might put it down all 5.
Maybe we'll go and compromise and go for a 5.5.
That's about right.
Finally, the coach, Erik ten Hag, what does he get for yesterday? He got a 0 against Crystal Palace. So what would it
be? Yeah, I think, look, it's hard. Here's our frustration of losing to Arsenal. Season over, not qualifying for Europe, etc. All the feelings. And yeah, you mark the manager down, of course. In this specific 90 minutes, given the injury situation, playing against so-called the best team in the league, the team top of the league, a 0-0 draw if Casemiro is 10 metres further forward, you're saying, yeah, standard. So I thought the performance wasn't good. It wasn't good, but it was a hell of a lot better than what I thought it was going to be. So given that, a six. Again, I understand he's sort of not well received at the moment amongst the fan base, and rightly so, in regards to a lot of the issues he faces and the club faces. But I don't know, I'll throw it to you. I'd go a 6 out of 10, but in terms of tactically or from the start, was there anything different you would have preferred to have seen? Here we've got Ahmad starting, etc. Would you have changed much from Erik ten Hag's approach?
Given what he had available...
I looked at the bench and I was like, okay, there is a part that you're proud as a Manchester United fan to see some youth products on the bench, but Manchester United against Arsenal, a big game, that cannot be a bench.
Yeah, there's not much different I would have done. Perhaps I would have started Willy Kambwala instead of Casemiro.
That's a shout. That's something I definitely was thinking.
Yeah. Other than that, probably not. I tell you something that I've wanted to see, and I know it wouldn't be totally fair on the kid, but we have Harry Amas on the bench. I am desperate for United to have a left-footed player at left-back. I would like
In regards to what Erik ten Hag tells us, and I do believe him to be genuine in this thing in regards to that balance and having left-sided, left-centre-back and a left-back, etc. Again, there is a balance in regards to trying a 17-year-old or an experienced pro in Diego Below or Aaron Wan-Bissaka. There is a definite difference. But there is also finding that balance in regards to the principles which he talks about and the rules which he talks about and providing that balance with Harry Amas. Now, you can't throw Harry Amas in the FA Cup final against Manchester City. And are we going to learn anything if he plays against Newcastle or Brighton that changes our outlook on the coming weeks? No. So it's a tough spot for Ten Hag and Amas there at the left-back situation. But I do agree. At the moment, when we all say, just play the kids, I definitely do want to see him, not just from an individual point of view. You want to see a youth product player. I just want to see, a left-back play at left-back.
Yeah, and maybe that Brighton game might be the chance to give him his debut because, you know, the 30th game of the season quite often is a bit of a dead rubber. And
I think both teams have nothing to play for. It could be the perfect opportunity.
Yeah, and quite often for United these days, the last few games of the season are all dead rubbers. I would like to see him get an opportunity, but I don't expect him to start in the FA Cup final. That would be wild.
I'll throw one to you, and this won't happen, and it shouldn't happen. It's just, again, a lot of my frustration was thought, is there a case? So let's say Rasmus Højlund has another two bad performances against Brighton and Newcastle. Do you throw Ethan Wheatley just for something different up front in the FA Cup final? Just hope there's a miracle story out there sort of thing? And again, it won't happen. Rasmus Højlund should start up front against City. You can't throw Wheatley in that. But just in regards to my feeling at the moment, I don't feel Hoyland's going to score. Now, that's not to say I feel Wheatley's going to score, but maybe he could. Maybe something could happen. I'm just thinking, do you see a situation where there is a hit, whether it be at striker or at left back or at right back or at centre back, do you think there is room for it, like a proper shock in team selection for the FA Cup?
No. Ten Hag doesn't tend to shock with his team selections, and I don't see him dropping Højlund for Wheatley.
I'm not suggesting it would be the right thing to do. I think it's where we are at the moment. We're trying to find whatever we can to try and make something better. And it's a tough spot.
Something that I wouldn't be against would be playing both of them, but then you'd have to go to a 4-4-2 really to make that happen.
And the one team you don't do that against is obviously City. It is tricky.
Unless he goes with a 3-5-2 or something like that. He definitely is going to need to do something different tactically in the FA Cup final.
I wouldn't be shocked. You mentioned earlier that the Manchester derby back when Fred was man of the match. From memory, was it in the second half or did he start? I forget. Maybe you can jog my memory. But Bruno Fernandes, I'm not a huge fan of it, but sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Bruno Fernandes on the right. We haven't seen it for a while, and I think that's a good thing. But in regards to that, something different, just changing things up in terms of maybe solidifying midfield a little bit. Could you see a situation where Bruno, if fit, is the one on the right-hand side?
Maybe, yeah. I think he's going to have to pack the midfield.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I think this is going to... The way we're going to have to set up in this FA Cup final is probably going to be something similar to how we set up at Anfield in December. We're just going to have to make it as difficult for them as possible and hopefully score on the counterattack. But I think even if we execute that plan perfectly, I still think City will win the game.
Look, we could have our best performance of the season. We could play really well. We could have a great game plan. All 11 players could have a very good game. City could still win. City very likely would still win. In a game like this, when you're playing a team far superior, not only you need to play really well, you need the other team to have an off day. And look, City is human, then maybe they will have an off day. But you can't just play well against better opposition. You need something to fall in your favour.
Yeah, I think even if we play reasonably well and we're actually leading the game for a long spell, I just think eventually they'll break us down and one goal will lead to two. They're just too good. You know, they've got and they can. Their bench is obviously much stronger than what we have as well.
Do you think likely they go win the league? I do think they go win the league from here. But let's say there's a hypothetical situation where they lose the league on the last day or win the league. Do you think there's if you had to choose one which benefits the FA Cup final, is it them winning the league and sort of having too much of a night out and sort of getting on the piss for sort of one or two days and over-celebrating? Or is it more sort of beneficial for Manchester United if they lose, if City were to lose and sort of be more fired up to sort of save the season with a trophy? Like if you had to choose one which benefits Manchester United more, which one do you think, them winning the league or not winning the league?
I'm not sure it really matters.
Yeah, you're right, play doesn't matter, but here we are, I'm just clutching.
Yeah, that's what we have to do at the moment, to cut the straws. But they're used to going into cup finals being champions. In the opposite scenario, that would be interesting to see how they would be psychologically. Yeah. If they lost the league to Arsenal, how would they then? Where would they be? You know, mentally.
Because it would be their only trophy, which they'd be done for. Which, look, City can deal with pressure. They've shown they can deal with pressure. That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, but I don't see that happening either because there's no way. There's not a Tottenham fan in the world who wants to win that game on Tuesday night.
That's a fascinating time now. Like, Tottenham score early. Like, it's a 5 a.m. kickoff here in Sydney. I'll be up watching it. Unfortunately, they'll start work early on Wednesday. But that's fascinating, that one.
It's going to be a really weird atmosphere because nobody inside that stadium is going to want the home team to win. But the Tottenham players will want to win. Yeah, but
I think it's one of those ones before the game. We had a maybe similar today, yesterday against Arsenal, in regards to, do we want Arsenal to win? Well, we don't want them to win on our patch, but do we want City to win? And it's finding that balance. Once the whistle goes and you're there and you're watching a game of football, you want to win regardless. You look at, I remember Arsenal and Tottenham themselves, when Arsenal, is the season they went invincible. Tottenham scored a last-minute penalty to make it 2-2. Arsenal only needed a draw to win the title, so Arsenal won the title off that 2-2 draw. Tottenham fans were going wild when they equalised 2-2. It made Arsenal win the title at their ground. I think when you're in there watching a football game, it is 90 minutes. Everything else goes out the window.
Yeah, a really, really fascinating stat is that Man City have lost every single game they've played at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Don't think they've scored in the league or something. There's some crazy stuff. Maybe they've got a goal now, maybe, but there was a stat for a while they even had scored. But yeah, I do know they have a bad record there, which is, again, it's interesting, definitely.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, will the negative energy filter through to the Tottenham players? Because if Tottenham score, will the home fans even celebrate that much? It's going to be such a weird game. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm going to ask you what I tend to ask all my guests in recent times, and that's that question that every United fan is talking about at the moment. And do you think Erik ten Hag should be here next season?
Should is an interesting way of framing it. There's cases for both, definitely cases for both. I would like to see it, and I fully understand and even agree with large parts of the other side which want to move him on. There are so many complexities to the argument and the position of Manchester United manager at the moment. I want to see him stay. If Ineos know a better option out there and believe they have the right man to take Manchester United forward, I'll be on board with that. the evidence I have, I would give him another season. He'll be extremely lucky to get that season, but sometimes you need a little bit of luck. Sir Alex Ferguson got a little bit of luck in 1989. I would like to see him stay. And I do think if I was a betting, it's a risky bet, but if I was a betting man, I do think Ineos do stick with him as well. And here I am, I'll sit here at the moment and say that is the right decision. But look, half the fan base sit on the other side of the fence, and it's hard to disagree with that as well. So I would like to, but it's not a good situation for anyone. Ineos, the manager, fans, players, etc. It's a tough spot.
Yeah, I just have a major issue with his tactics and his setup, and it's been talked about at length by the pundits. I remember Gary Neville in the Liverpool League match saying, I can't believe what I'm seeing here, the way United are set up. I've never seen a team set up that way. Big gaps in the middle of the pitch. That was an issue even way back in the first game of the season against Wolves. With the midfield are pushing up very high, but the defence is very low.
Do you think there's a case, and look, this is a debate you could have for an hour, and we get out the tactical boards and sort of go into it's a great analysis to sort of further the points, but there's a case we talk about Jose Mourinho sometimes use an example in terms of whether it's accurate or not. It's what was perceived amongst the fan base and the media. That trip to West Ham, he wasn't happy with Manchester not buying a centre-back, so he played Scott McTominay at centre-back to make a point. Is there a case with Erik ten Hag's stubbornness, he's just sticking to the plan he wants, even with wrong personnel? He's going to say, this is the plan I want, even though these players don't suit it, I'm just going to stick with it to show what I need. These players can't do it, but this is what I want to do. They can't do it, but I'll do it anyway, just to show what I need in regards to, whether it's, say, a Frankie de Jong or this player, etc. Just seems, do you think there is a case of that? He knows this is the wrong approach. He knows it's not helping, but in regards to get what he wants and ultimately sort of weed out the weak players or weed out the non-suitable players, it's his only real approach. Like if he's to cave and play players out of position sort of thing, it's not really going to sort of help the team moving forward if he is to get his moving parts in the future.
Yeah, there really is that element of stubbornness. I think last season he was more pragmatic on United, obviously had a far better season. This season he's trying to play the football that he wants to play, and it's not really worked. And, the alarm bells were there in that first game of the season against Wolves, and it hasn't really improved.
I think stubbornness is one of those things. It's a positive and a negative. I think last season it was used as somewhat of a positive. This season, the stubbornness obviously has proved to be a negative. So it is a trait a manager needs, but they need to find that balance. And that is the criticism that here I am sitting saying, I want Erik ten Hag to stay, but a huge criticism at the moment is that stubbornness.
Yeah, and I'm just not convinced that even if we do make a number of fantastic signings in the summer, and I just don't think playing this way is a recipe for success. If we do keep him, what I'm worried about is that we have a horrendous start of the season and he has to be sacked by Christmas and we've wasted another season. And that's what I'm really worried about.
Look, that's the risk, and that's why we have these debates. The other side of the court, well, if you bring in the new manager and he doesn't work, well, you just wasted giving him a 3-year contract. That football is a risk. Football is a gamble. And that is why the people at the top of the club are paid a lot of money, because they're going to pay with it for their job. Pay for it with their job. And it's just not a nice position to be in.
If they do replace him, it is going to be fascinating to see who that's going to be, because there's no obvious.
That's a huge part for me. I don't know. Maybe the perfect manager is out there. Maybe, hypothetically, obviously, I know none of the fan base agree. Let's say Gareth Southgate is the man. Maybe just the way it clicks, maybe a relationship with this player or that player or this signing, or he has a good relationship with the referee who gives us a favourable call on the first day. Maybe it would work with Gareth. You never know. But in terms of the evidence we have, I just don't see a better manager. The better manager could be out there. But if someone can point to me a realistic solution where this manager improves us, because gosh, I'm going back 2 years when we had Solskjaer. Erik ten Hag was the man to fix us. And I'm just thinking, well, at the moment now we're saying, I don't know, De Zerbi. I'm not saying De Zerbi, but for example, okay, he's the man who's got to fix us. Well, in 2 years, who's going to be the next man after De Zerbi? That's not to say Erik ten Hag is the man, but it's just you just never know how it's going to unfold. And I would like to see a manager given his 3-year contract, see how it goes. If it fails, it fails, and move on. But how often do we cut it short? And sort of, what would have happened if we kept Louis van Gaal? What would have happened if we kept Mourinho? What would have happened if we kept Solskjaer? I just think we're just going to ask the same question in 2 years' time when Erik ten Hag's managing another club. Well, what if we kept Erik ten Hag? What would have happened? And I just say that's not to say that it's the right decision to keep him. You do need to move forward. You do need to take those risks. But yeah, it's just a shame. It's just a shame where we are.
Yeah, just a quick sidebar. You mentioned Solskjaer there. If we could bring him in for one game, it would be the FA Cup final. He has
for bringing him back in with Fred.
Yeah, Solskjaer and Fred, yeah, because he has a good record against Guardiola. Although, without a left back, it makes the team so unbalanced.
As I said, even if we were at our best, fully fit, playing really good football, and we played well on the day, City could still win, very likely still win. We'll live in hope. We're all going to tune into the final. Thousands are going to head down to Wembley. We're all going to live in hope when that whistle goes. You think, oh, hang on, City have an off day. Here we are. We're going to win it. And that's football. That's the game we love and hate at the same time.
Yeah, it's going to be galling to lose 2 cup finals in a row to Man City. And that's the most likely scenario. I mean, if we can throw away a 3-goal lead to Coventry in the semi-final, we can well lose to Man City in the final. I'm just not convinced about Ten Hag. I just wouldn't risk another season on him. That's just where I am at the moment.
Do you have, though, and again, my podcast for another day, we have many of these debates, but gun to the head, choose a new manager. Is there one that stands out? Okay, we'll go get him, and that's a gamble I'm willing to take?
Simone Inzaghi. Yeah, that would be my preference. Been massively successful in Italy with Lazio and Inter Milan. I think he's won 8 trophies now in Italy. Obviously, narrowly lost to Man City in the European Cup final with a vastly inferior team.
Yeah.
He looks like an astute coach. But if we were going to take a risk on a young manager, it would probably be Kieran McKenna. Now, people are going to laugh at me for this, but I mean, Xavi Alonso had no experience when he took over at Bayer Leverkusen. Arteta had no experience when he took off at Arsenal. So sometimes that just works. Yeah. You don't always need to have a CV with lots of trophies on it to be successful as a coach. Sometimes you just have it. You either have it or you don't.
I agree. And look, we can debate it till the cows come home, who's the right fit. But you're right. And unfortunately, you don't know that right fit, whether it be a player or a manager, a transfer incoming. You don't know how it unfolds until they leave the club when their contract runs out. Look at the moment, Mason Mount. What a horrible signing. It's an absolute disaster. What happens if he stays for 10 years, wins 3 Premier League titles, 2 Champions League? We're saying, hang on, it was a good bit of business. You never know until the time is up. And it's interesting.
Yeah, but whether it happens now or not, I do think Kieran McKenna is starting to look like a future United manager. He's done unbelievable things with Ipswich, back-to-back promotions. Yeah. And obviously, he's been a coach at United already under multiple managers, and he just seems to just keeps improving as a coach, and maybe one day he will be United manager. But obviously, the ideal path would be him to go to a step up from Ipswich. I think he's going to find it difficult, in the Premier League.
It's one of those ones, I agree with everything you said about McKenna, but it's one of those ones, if he comes in and loses the first day of the season or gets a draw at home to Bournemouth, well, we're going to sit here and say, what's he want? What experience does he have at a club like this in terms of that manager's position?
United, when you don't have a CV and then you lose a couple of games and the fans get on the manager's back and say, what's he won? What's he ever done? What's his resume?
Well, because we all sit here and say we have patience. I don't care about results as long as I see what we're doing, as long as I see good football, as long as I see a plan. We say that. We don't want that. But we're lying to ourselves when we say that. It sounds good, but we don't. We need results, and we need results tomorrow.
Yeah. It's because of the history of the club, and we see ourselves as being on the same level as Real Madrid in terms of the size of the club, which is
Liverpool and City's success hasn't helped this situation in terms of the feeling around the club. Seeing your two big rivals get it so bright and be so successful, obviously City far more than Liverpool, but Liverpool obviously have been in that category. If it was Tottenham and Everton at the top of the table over the last 5 years, it would still feel bad, but not as bad. But seeing your two main rivals get it so right when we get it so wrong has obviously weighed us down a lot.
Definitely, that's absolutely compounded our misery in the last 10 years, is the success of Liverpool and Man City. And now Arsenal are back to being title challengers again, while we languish in eighth position in the league. And we could even, if West Ham were to get a result against City on the final day of the season, which is obviously very unlikely, we would end up finishing ninth. But then eighth or ninth is neither here nor there. It's just, both positions are as bad as each other. Both those spots are outside of the European spots. So that's going to be really galling as well. No European football at all. I'm not one of these people that says, no, I'd rather be not in Europe.
Give me the conference every day over no European football. Especially with a big squad, as United will have. You need a big squad in regards to, could you imagine having a squad of 26 players and only playing 13 or 14 once a week in the Premier League? You're going to have half a squad pissed off with the manager for not playing. You need European football.
Yeah, and some people are snobs. You know, they just want to play in the Champions League or nothing. I don't subscribe to that. And match day revenue is massive as well. You're going to miss all that too next season.
I'm in a minority. A lot of people laugh at me. And a part of it is a little bit sort of tongue-in-cheek with a little bit of banter. But there is a part of me, I do want the Conference League to be, are we going to win the Conference League given our situation? Probably not. But I would also like to be the first team to win the Champions League, Europa League and Conference League. I do think that will be quite, in regards to our European history, quite a sort of good feather in the cap. Yeah, we'll probably get knocked out in the quarters of the Conference League. Yeah, we do know how that goes. But I'm with you. Give me any European football over none. Just from a selfish point of view, watching matches midweek, I don't want to be waiting a week in between games. I want to see my team play.
Yeah, that would be a nice collection, but given the size of our club, we'll be mocked for winning the Europa Conference League by rival fans.
You're right, but I've got to the stage now. I don't care what they think. We've given that sort of far too much service in the last 10 years. It's time to start looking at our own doorstep and forget what others think. And because they're always going to laugh, they're always going to mock, they're always going to pick the bones apart. We can only control what's in our own backyard. And yeah, give me anything. Anything's better than what we're saying at the moment, unfortunately.
Yeah, 100%. You know, the season under Mourinho, where we won two trophies, he would say three, that was exceptional in comparison to what we're having to put up with at the moment. Mm. At the time, we didn't really appreciate it. That we wanted bigger and better things, but give me that right now over this absolute turgid campaign that we had to endure. Is that 9 defeats at Old Trafford now this season?
I've stopped counting. Yeah. I think it's 14. I think it's 16 wins and 14 losses. So what the home and away split is, I'm not sure, but too many. Disappointing.
Yeah, it's 14 defeats in the league this season. I think it's 9 defeats at Old Trafford in all comps. I don't think it's in the league, but it's still pretty bad. And a goal difference of -4.
That's why we're going to very likely, we're going to finish with a negative goal difference. And that has to be the first time in my lifetime that's a negative goal difference. Maybe it would have to be.
Yeah. Another talking point has been the future of Pochettino. And the thing is with them is that they're finishing the season strongly. And that he might stay because of that. Whereas Ten Hag is not finishing the season strongly, it's actually got worse. So that will count against Ten Hag. You know, it's like football, you're only as good as your last game. And what will be fresh in the memory of the Chelsea owners and fans will be this fantastic end to the season, whereas fresh in our memory will be this run of 2 wins in 11 games. So Ten Hag, like you say, will be lucky to keep his job at the end of the season if he does. But It'll be fascinating to see what happens, whether he stays or goes, and if they do get rid of him, who do they bring in? Because there's not an obvious name out there. But I feel that they've probably made their minds up already and are not communicating that to the public until after the FA Cup final. I think we'll know by the Monday after the Cup final.
Oh, no. We knew when Louis Van Gaal was walking up the steps, we knew what was happening. So, look, hopefully if Ineos were to make a decision, hopefully it's done with a little bit more respect and dignity than what the Glazers did back then or Woodward did back then. But, yeah, you're right. In regards to a decision probably has been made. Whatever side of the fence that is, as long as the decision is in the best interest of Manchester United, not especially just in regards to, as I said, the dignity and respect, the way it was done under Louis Van Gaal, in regards, very similar situation. FA Cup, Dutch manager, precarious position, extremely similar position. It definitely needs to be dealt with a little bit more classy than what it was.
100%, but I don't think that Ten Hag will be walking into the press conference room with the trophy in his hand.
With the trophy, that makes a difference to the story.
Yeah. Let's hope we do win the cup final, and Ten Hag will be hoping to keep his job, but it's very much 50-50. To be honest, after the 4-0 at Crystal Palace, I thought that's it. They're definitely going to get rid of him now. But once you've kind of, you calm down and you analyse the situation, you think, I'm not sure. But we will know by Monday the 27th at the very latest. Hopefully we don't find out during the game again, because yeah, that wasn't really fair. The managers, we criticise managers, we get angry with them at times, get emotional, but they're still human beings at the end of the day, and they don't deserve to be treated the way Van Gaal was treated that day. It's been great to have you on as always, Tom. It's a pity that we weren't here under better circumstances, but hopefully next season.
Yeah, I think that's the tag a lot of us have used over the last 10 years. Hopefully next season. That's all you can say. We're powerless as fans. We can only live in hope, and that's what we'll do, but always a pleasure.
Yeah, at some point we're going to be successful again. I don't think we're going to win 13 titles in 20 years ever again. But at some point we're going to win the league again. We just don't know when that is. So hopefully it's in the next 5 years. But yeah, Tom, thanks for coming on. And hopefully we will be chatting about a victory the next time you're on. It'll probably be next season, I reckon.
Thank you, mate.
All right, see you later.